Welcome to Real Estate Coaching Radio, starring award-winning real estate coaches and number one international best-selling authors, Tim and Julie Harris. Real Estate Coaching Radio is the nation's number one daily radio show for realtors who demand authentic real-time coaching. Get ready for fluff-free, unfiltered, full-strength honesty about what's truly working to get you into action, helping others, and making money now in today's real estate market. Now to our hosts, Tim and Julie Harris.
3, 2, 1, and we're back. And Julie, it is Monday, February 8th, and we have a really great show for these guys today, and actually for the next few days. We are talking about the ever importance of systematizing your business. Actually making your business into a system is the thing that you should be focusing on along the way while you're learning sales skills. By the way, learning sales skills and learning how to be a proactive lead generator in itself is the most important system that you'll ever really have to master in real estate. And we've said this before, and sometimes we say this is a joke, but it's really not a joke. If there's ever only one thing you get good at in real estate, it's basically mastering the system of being a proactive lead generator. You can be terrible at literally everything else, but if you can be a proactive lead generator, specifically going after listings, then you will not have any worries that you cannot make go away with more, guess what, proactive lead generation.
This is very true. You know, our old broker used to have a saying, doesn't matter what's wrong with you today, getting a new listing will fix it.
Yep.
So, and that's really true. I mean, put yourself in that mindset, right? So, you know, even if you have a bunch of pendings, how great do you feel when you take that next new listing? And, you know, add to that, lather, rinse, repeat. So today we're talking about the systematization specifically of a spoke that every single listener should be working their entire career, and that's their past clients and centers of influence. You remember when we had our event about, what was it called, the top 100 agents in real estate, and you were interviewing some of these very, very experienced agents that had literally thousands of past clients. And I'll never forget this. You asked if you could change one thing looking back, would it be?
Let's describe the event just like.
Sure.
So we were in, I think that was Montage,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Montage, Laguna Beach, circa probably about 10 years ago. And it was, in order to be in the room, you had to pay $5,000. And I don't think it was 100 people, Julie. I think it was like 50 people
maybe
that were in the room.
Yeah. Yeah.
And essentially, you also had to have a certain level of production criteria. People flew in from all over the country to go to this thing. And everyone was given, the room, the chairs were set up like a horseshoe, basically. Or like a U, you know. And essentially, each person in the room, they didn't have to, but each person in the room would then be given the opportunity to present something that they were obviously an expert at. And remember, these are not just casual top producers. These were the absolute cream of the crop. And what Julie's describing is, I mean, it wasn't a surprise to us, but it was a surprise to everyone in the room. Because someone would come in and, you know, they'd be selling 500, 600,000 houses a year or whatever, and everyone had heard of them. And maybe they're on New York Times, you know, top agent list and Wall Street Journal
Big
list
guns.
And all.
Yeah.
I mean, really. And the thing that all of them said wasn't that they wished they would have spent more time on, you know, essentially buying business or branding or marketing. All of them said the same thing, that they wish they would have spent more time under centers of influence and past clients, because they've realized over the years. And I remember when you and I had this epiphany in our real estate business,
mm-hmm.
too.
Sure.
When we got in the business, we had no centers of influence and past clients.
None.
In our first year in the business, we sold over 100 houses. You know, this is back when we were in our early 20s, basically right out of college.
Mm-hmm.
And that experience basically for the first, you know, 2-3 years was basically just going after new business. But I remember on the fourth year, we were always very good at tracking, dry erase boards, the whole thing. Everything's part of the real estate treasure map Julie and I essentially created and honed while we were selling real estate ourselves. So I remember it was like, it may be the third or the fourth year. We had this big, huge dry erase board, and we track where every single closing. Our goal was always to sell, you know, between 100 and 200 houses a year. We didn't basically just sell houses just for the sake of, you know, hitting a higher sales number. We always based our sales goals on what our specific, guess what, savings and investment goals were. So if we wanted to buy 5 new rental properties that particular year, and it was going to take this amount of money, and then we knew our business and personal overhead was this amount of money and whatever, we'd add all those things up, divided by average sales transaction, and that would be how many houses we'd had to sell that year.
It sounds like a familiar podcast.
Yes, it does. Well, that's how we formed our business, and that's how we formed our coaching business. And that's how we formed every business, because we want to basically make it so that we're never losing fact that the purpose of the business ultimately is to produce profit. Because without profit, you don't have a business. You don't. It's just essentially, it's a nonprofit business in its very sense. But I remember this dry erase board marking down all these listings. It was about halfway through the year. And we obviously had a lot of buyer sides too. And this is when we did have buyer agent transact or buyer agents too. We had seven buyer agents that we did have a team. So when we talk about the fallacies of the team model, Julie and I were in real estate when you could still make good margins off your team members because there weren't as many ways to generate leads and so in paid ways. And so the agents would come work for you would be expecting to do their own proactive lead generation. And so you actually had good margins on your buyer side of your buyer agents. Whereas nowadays, every time I've done a spreadsheet for someone in the last probably 5 years, in most cases, the buyer agents and their teams are actually operating at a loss. And the person running the business is subsidizing it through their own cash flow that would normally go to their profit from the listing side of the business. Anyway, I don't want to drive down on that too much. But what we discovered by looking at all these closings were that by the time we were in the business for 3 or 4 years, right in there, the business was almost all, well, 50% of it, 60% of it was coming from centers of influence and past clients. And I remember what we were very good at tracking. And so we actually were able to look at sort of the genealogy on some of these referrals. And what we discovered was, like you'd say, you know, Julie would say, for example, maybe she got a listing lead from somebody in her orchestra, right? Julie was a professional musician. So someone in her orchestra would send her a listing lead. Well, that listing lead, if we just put up their referral from Betty and, you know, the flute section, that would have been, you know, as far as most agents go. But it turns out Betty would have been a referral from somebody who was a referral from somebody. And so when we started tracing the genealogy of these, is what we saw was there was effect on some of these centers of influence of past client bloodlines, basically. So when you looked at the genealogy of the business, it wasn't just a referral, It wasn't a 1 degree referral.
Yeah.
Sometimes it was a 5 and 6 degree referral. And that's after we've been in the business for only 3.5 years. And so we obviously had the epiphany that we needed to then do a better job with our centers of influence of past clients. And that's when Julie and I realized that just mailing them a newsletter and emailing them and all that wasn't sufficient. So we started actually calling them. And then our business really took off. And the experiences we had calling them, and Julie was really good at it. She's actually better at it than me. I don't think anyone's going to be particularly surprised about that. And she started calling the centers of influence of past clients. And, you know, we'd start getting more and more referrals. And the experience, I remember when you and I really started doing that in a discipline fashion, like a certain number every mm-hmm. single day. I remember the experiences we had because I would listen, you and I shared this big office above our garage, and I remember you and I would do it at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I would hear you having these conversations, and the people were always like, you know, I had these experiences too, but I just remember specifically with the referrals that came from your personal center mm-hmm. of influence. Mm-hmm. They're always like so glad to hear from you, and then they're always like, they almost rack their brains trying to think of a referral for you.
Yeah, and that gets easier the more you do it,
yeah.
Of course. So, yeah, I mean, I think most people would be surprised that experienced agents say, you know what, I absolutely need to do a better job of that. And as coaches, I think we can absolutely corroborate that. It's one of the things that we're always making sure that they're doing. But don't just take it from us. Listen to this NAR statistic, okay? So here's the facts. According to NAR, 77% of sellers interview one agent before they list their property. So here's the question. Is it going to be you? If I called your database right now, would they name you? Because 89% say they would hire their previous agent, but only 26% actually do. I think that statistic right there shows you that everyone needs to do a better job of this. Why? Because they never hear from their agent once they're closed. Okay. So some people say that is a term, loyalty deficit or something like that, where they just, and we would go on listing appointments. You got to realize if you're the one agent they're going to talk to, or even if you're competing, you're in front of them because their previous agent is not.
Right. And now, and the previous agent's, dare I say, defense, they yes. might actually not be in the business anymore.
I had that thought when I read that stat
and
as
that's
well.
Probably the real reason. Because if you think at most agents, I don't know how old the stat is. I bet you the stat's 5 years old, but still relevant. Is it new?
Mm-hmm.
It is 5? Okay.
Yeah,
so you're looking at a stat that's basically also not taking, I mean, most people don't buy and sell, but every 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that the attrition of agents is baked into that statistic.
Yep.
But not that doesn't account for all of it, right?
No.
Because you and I remember going on appointments where they would say, you know what, my previous agent didn't even send me a Christmas card.
Yeah, I know.
So if they didn't send you a Christmas card, probably they also haven't called you since they closed. And they would, some of them were a little bit pissed about it. You know, they'd be not, like, I never really even heard from them after we closed.
I wouldn't say the word was pissed. Pissed was
disappointed.
They were disappointed. Yeah. They were probably, if dare we say, even hurt from it.
I think you're right about that.
Yeah. So that's a thing you got to keep in mind. Julie, we should probably just go down that trail, the path real quick in case we have any first time listeners.
Yeah.
Essentially, what actually goes on the minds of their centers of influence and their past clients when they don't hear from them.
Yeah.
This is so you guys, the psychology that's rooted around contacting your centers of influence and past clients. When you talk to even experienced agents, guys, trust me, this feeling of not wanting to be perceived as a desperate pushy car salesman type, mm-hmm. that is an emotion that will never go away no matter how many houses you sell and how successful you become. People will always have a natural you get more efficient at it, you basically become a little more calcified to it, but you're always going to feel a little nervous before you do any kind of prospecting. Mm-hmm. And that's just the way it goes, and you can't take that edge away, but you do come, like I said, you become a little bit more calcified around the emotion of it, but it's always going to be there. So let's just say it that way; it doesn't go away. But and I'll talk to agents that are huge producers that have been in the business forever, and they will often arm wrestle me not to actually have to pick up the phone and call their centers of influence and past clients. They just assume send them gold Rolexes every month and pick up the phone in some cases just because they don't want to have that.
Or
emotion.
Do a recipe card postcard plan.
Right, and so this is the point I'm trying to make is when you don't directly call. Did I say email, Julie?
No, not.
Did
yet.
I say
nope.
drip? Drip.
Nope, haven't
nope.
been dripping.
No dripping. Did I say social networking eyes?
Nope.
Okay, call. When you call your centers of influence in an era where everybody else does things passively, you immediately make a huge impact on what they think about you. Now, I want you to think of something. I have a question, and this is the question I ask, especially when I come across top producing agents that won't call their centers of influence. You tell me one positive benefit of not calling, other than, obviously you don't have to overcome your emotional response, right? What do you get from not calling? And if you start analyzing why you don't call by answering that question, you quickly figure out what you're really trying to do is, like I just said, you're trying to essentially make it so that you don't have to overcome your, I'm going to call it, irrational fear of calling your centers of influence and past clients. But when you don't call them and you don't ask them for business, what is it that you're actually telling them about you? Or what is it that you're telling them that you think about them, right? Your centers of influence and past clients. So your centers of influence and past clients, they know you're in the real estate business. They, they're going to assume that you're, somewhat successful and all the whole thing. But when you don't overtly ask them for business, what message are you sending to them? You tell me, is there any good message you're sending them by not asking them for business?
Nothing good. And, no information. Would you say people generally think positively about no information, or do they generally go down a fairly negative rabbit hole, such as they're too busy for me? Or my business, I'm only in a certain price range. Sure.
Okay. So when Julie and I were selling real estate, we tell this story. It's actually in our book, but it's really important. And again, experience this yourself as I'm telling this story. So Julie and I, every morning, would go to this Starbucks. Now, I want you to remember, we worked out of our house, but we go to the Starbucks every morning. And here's the reason why. Because there was always a long line, and we sold real estate in New Albany, Ohio. And there was always a long line at the Starbucks. Because, it was Starbucks and it was in the morning. And
it's on the way to the freeway.
Right. Even when it was cold, there was a long line. And the gal that managed the Starbucks, name was Tristan. And Tristan actually ended up buying a condo from us. But we got to know her. She actually had Starbucks sponsor some of our charity events we do in New Albany, the pumpkin drive and all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. In any event, Julie and I would be in line and, the line would be long. And she'd always shout out, "Hey, Tim and Julie. How's the real estate market?" Or she'd say something like that. She'd start a conversation for us almost every morning. And sure enough, we'd end up having conversations with people. And after a while, we got to know all the people. It's like if you do things on a regular basis, like going to a Orange Theory or going to a Starbucks and whatnot, and people start to recognize you and feel comfortable with you, that's a great, easy way to build your centers of influence and past client. Anytime you're going to be around the regular group of people, you're going to actually make a lot of lasting friends. And even a silly line of Starbucks, everyone's feeling the same thing. I want my caffeine hit. I don't necessarily want to be here. I want to go through, I have to go to work. So everyone's sort of sharing the same shared misery, right? And so that in itself, that shared experience sort of bonds you in an odd way. Just like when you go to an Orange Theory. We've had, since we started suggesting agents go to Orange Theory or some other organized fitness workout thing. But the beauty about Orange Theory is that they force you at the beginning of the Orange Theory to sit in a room basically around all these people. I mean, you know, again, if you're a human.
Well, now you have to stand outside around a bunch of people.
Right. Yes. So anytime you're going to be put in a situation. Now, the Orange Theory, the reason that's also a great environment for meeting people is because everybody's there, knows that they're about to have their ass kicked.
You will suffer together.
You're going to suffer together. And you guys probably know this, but anytime a group of people go through something stressful, that has a sort of lizard brain way of making people that much more bonded together. So that's a nice thing about the Orange Theory. So one of the things we suggest is you actually go to Orange Theory you go to two different classes. So like on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you go to maybe the 8 o'clock class. On Tuesday and Thursday, you go to 11 a.m. class or whatever. You guys get the idea. That way you're getting to know different groups of people. And you'll find that every time you go to one of those classes, you're going to run into, 50% of the people that are just going to become
regulars,
your friends.
Yeah.
Right. And then you're going to start doing referrals out of that. Well, the Starbucks works the same thing. So anyway, back to my story. So we're in line at the Starbucks, and every morning, this is for years, okay, guys? I'm just shuddering to think how much we spent at that Starbucks, actually, is what I was just thinking about. I know.
It's part of your DNA now.
Still, exactly. So, and she'd start the conversation, and there was always this, usually it was the father and the son, or sometimes it was just one of them, and they were Farmers Insurance agents. May have been Allstate, but one of the two. They owned one of those franchise deals. And they sold residential policies. So they sold, normal
homeowners insurance.
Homeowners insurance, yeah. Auto insurance, and all kinds of things that, you'd want to be having your local top producing real estate agent possibly sell or help you sell to their, their real estate clients, right? We did a lot of relo. So we could have been setting these guys up with so much insurance sales, it was ridiculous. And we'd see them every morning. Polite, hello, how do you do? Never once in all those years did they ever ask us for business. It actually gets worse than that because there's this club that was nearby that actually Julie would frequent in this swimming lessons thing that she would do. And one of them would show up and never once asked anything about real estate. Never brought it up once. And so as the years progressed, I remember at first, and I actually went through this, in retrospect, trying to share this experience with coaching clients so that they could understand the fallacy of not actually asking direct questions. And I remember we would see these guys, or one of them, every single day. And for the first maybe 18 months we were living there, because we weren't from this market, they would be polite, but that was it. And then I remember after that, I started to work on it. And I know Julie did too. Like, why aren't these guys asking us for business? And then it wasn't too long after that our minds started to fill with negative answers, and those became conscious thoughts. And the conscious thoughts were they don't like us, the conscious thoughts were they're too busy, they're too lazy, they're too arrogant, they're too this, the other thing, and the other thing. In other words, we did not have a single, we were still polite to them, hello, how do you do? And I hear some of you are thinking, well, why didn't you ask them for business? Because we had insurance. We didn't need insurance. Yeah. They should have been asking us for business because we were selling a hell of a lot of houses. And I bet you they could have had dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of new insurance clients had they asked us.
I totally would have used them. And,
we would have totally
I would have referred other agents to use them too, because that's not taking anything away from your own business.
But they never asked. And I remember
it became weird.
It did become weird. Awkward. It was uncomfortable. Right. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we're, I guess, likable, aren't we?
You especially.
Well, oh, how nice of you to say that. Yeah, so we'd be standing in line every morning, and these people would never, other than just your usual niceties, they would never ask us for business. And it became to the point was, after we moved, so Julie and I moved out of Ohio, we moved out west, and that, opened a different chapter in our lives. But then we started, looking back at those experiences again, trying to understand why we think and feel the way we did. And then it came, to Julie and I on a series of coaching calls. We were talking about this because at the time, Julie and I were coaching every single day, 12 to 15 different real estate agents. Every single day, we'd start every morning at 5 a.m. We'd end typically at 12:30 or something because we had breaks in the day. But we were coaching 65 to 75 different coaching clients, and all of them had weekly calls. And yes, if that sounds like hell to you, it was.
For 5 years?
5 years. Like it was bad.
Yeah.
But we did it.
Boot camp.
Well, it was boot camp, but that's what made us really good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Honestly, you can't.
Gives you a lot of depth and breadth to, you know, what you know.
And our patterns. Our listeners can tell.
Yeah.
When you guys are listening to us, I can tell you can tell. When you read our book, you can tell Julie and I have had that kind of experience. Because you're not going to have that many coaching clients wanting to pay you $1,000 a month for that long period of time. And we've obviously had coaching clients before that and have had thousands of coaching clients after that. But that was when we were really, really focusing on just doing one-on-one coaching. That's what our primary effort was. And then we started, the business grew bigger and we started hiring different coaches and all these other different things happened. But the point I'm trying to make to you guys is as we went through that trial by fire of having all those coaching calls, we had to figure out how to help our clients. Otherwise, we were out of integrity with, being a real estate coach. We aren't trainers. I mean, Julie and I are trainers. We're training you right now. But when you are on a one-on-one coaching call with a really good coach, that is coaching. That is someone whose job it is to help you move forward. And if they're not getting you to move forward, then it's because their, frankly, coaching skills suck and they need to get their coaching skills to improve. And that's the constant challenge Julie and I would always have. Every day after we'd have our long day of coaching, then after that, we'd go on a walk and we would, again, defrag from all of our coaching calls, talk about the different experiences we had. And this one thing that kept on coming up was, why can't we get these top producers to pick up the phone? And we knew the answer, their egos. That was the answer. I'm too busy. I'm too important. I don't want people
to think. I don't want to bother somebody.
I don't want to bother someone. Mm-hmm. I don't want people to think that I'm a, pushy salesperson. I don't want to appear that I'm desperate for, this, the other thing, or the upper end, realtors would always have even worse excuses than that. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, the real reason is because of how you perceive they'll perceive you. And you think they'll perceive you poorly by asking them for business. But the reality of it is they perceive you poorly if you don't.
That's absolutely true. I mean, think about friends of yours who have opened businesses. It could be a restaurant or a hair salon. And you know about that, but they never mention it to you. Isn't that weird? Doesn't that create an awkward sense of like maybe kind of throws your friendship off a little bit? It's weirder for you to not call, right? So, it's funny. There's a saying that I picked up somewhere in coaching, which is they say that they don't want to bother anybody, but what they really mean is that they can't be bothered.
Yeah, that's good. That's very good.
And, that's kind of an expression of ego if you drill down on that a little bit, because you're making it about you, not about them. And I can tell you that our coaching clients and our podcast listeners over the years who have gotten the heck over that, it's so much easier for them. Their business flow is so much more consistent.
Think about this, Jules.
Because they're making the calls about the client, the past client, and not about themselves.
What's the opportunity cost of not doing
the
work?
That's huge.
Yeah, think about that.
Well, I remember, I think it was Greg Newman that said
this. We need to explain that. Yes. So opportunity cost would mean basically, what are you losing by not doing the work?
Yeah.
And the opportunity cost that a lot of you guys are doing because you're not having transactions come to you as organically as they would had you actually been working your centers of influence and past clients could be measured probably in the hundreds of millions of dollars
for sure.
a year that agents are spending on gimmicky buying leads because they actually aren't doing what they should be doing in the first place, which is tending to their own centers of influence
and past clients.
It's the
reason you're buying leads. This is a large part of the reason. And when back to our montage event, when you asked Greg Newman, who I don't know how many thousands of past clients he has, he said, I realize now that I would have saved hundreds of thousands of dollars buying, whether that was marketing your way there or, paying for leads, when all I should have been doing is a better job with my database. And I thought that was really powerful, especially coming from somebody like him who has so many past clients anyway. You would assume that, he wouldn't say something like that, that it would just start turning. And he said, I had to buy too much business.
They don't come to you guys. You have to go to them. In this day and age where everywhere someone turns, especially because of social, it's very confusing. It's called oversaturation.
Yeah.
Real estate agents are essentially oversaturating in all the digital channels. That's the reason that this stuff is basically a fallacy. It doesn't really work, never really worked. You don't need to really about your brand. Your brand will be developed along the way. It's called your reputation from your success helping solve problems, which is called selling a house. Okay? Did you get all that? Because that's the truth.
Right.
That's the bottom line. And thinking you could shortcut it by buying it is not true. I was actually listening to somebody that I know, I haven't talked to in a long time, talking about, he was one of these YouTube influencers actually in the car world.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. Okay. And I was, and so I, we had met him at a car thing in California or something anyway, and who knows. But here's what he was saying, in essence, is that he was making really good money off of all of his car videos. He would do videos on new cars mostly. That's, you know, by good money, like low seven figures. But he said he's noticed that his views were going down. And his views were going down not because it doesn't make sense. Why would his views go down during COVID? Well, the answer is because there's more people, because of COVID, making car videos. And the algorithm for YouTube had actually changed to the point where, you know, essentially what he had done, all that content he had created was essentially starting to pay him less because it was getting less views. And that goes back to the main point of the podcast we did last week. I think it was on Friday, where, you know, would you build your castle on someone else's land? And that's ultimately what you guys do when you're spending money on anything. You're looking like, so for example, if you go do a whole bunch of social networking stuff, there's really no accumulative benefit from doing that work. You do a video, it goes up, and then it's lost forever, right? It has maybe a 20 minute or a 24 hour benefit. Even on this Clubhouse app, which trust me, guys, everyone's going to be talking about that very shortly. Those are one and done conversations. They're not recorded. They're not replays. Once that conversation happens, it's over. It'll, you know, it's live international conversation. It's interesting, but I want you to understand, if you're investing a lot of money there, there's no accumulative benefit to having actually done that. You know, maybe people start to follow you because they like what you had to say. But when you look at all this other stuff that you guys are being told to invest in, as in somehow by investment, it means you put a dollar in today and then in 7 years it's worth $2. That is the exact opposite of what happens in social networking, because you guys are building your castles on somebody else's land. You don't control the customer. You don't control you have to somehow get those people that are listening and watching your content. You have to get them off that platform, and then you have to get their permission to communicate directly with them off the platform. Otherwise, you're going to lose everything that you were thinking you were working towards, with the idea that one day, someday, hopefully, you know, breathe deep into the hopium juice, that you're going to somehow magically start getting business from all those sources. You guys understanding what we're trying to say here? Doesn't it feel like practical, tactical common sense, what we're trying to express to you?
It does. And it's so real world. While you were talking, I was thinking of two very specific examples that, you know, reasons that you need to be talking to all of your people all of the time. Okay. One sad and one happy. The sad one is that we have had several reports of people who have lost their jobs, can't get them back, don't know what to do. The assumption is I'm going to be foreclosed on, you know, that nobody even knows what a short sale is really, since the market's been hot so long. And so what does that person do? Usually they get bad information, no information. Somebody like you guys need to be talking to that person to get them out of their house. We talked about this on podcast last week. Get them out while they still have equity, or help them get a forbearance so they have enough time in their house to get a job. Okay. So if that person knew that you know how to help them, but you didn't bother to call, you've just lost that business.
You haven't earned the right
you
to
haven't
have
earned
that business.
Exactly.
It's like we were doing, I'll never forget this. We were doing I'll never forget this because the guy I said this to is really huge, you know, right. And I'm not. Yeah. And so we were in this really too small of a room. We were in Hawaii, and there was this really big guy who I later found out was an ex-FBI guy. So if you're listening, I do remember this exchange. Do you remember his name?
It'll come to me.
He's a really nice guy. Yeah. Remember you wrote us that really nice letter?
Yeah.
Anyway, so he stands up and he asks the question. He said, why didn't I get this listing? He did all this, you know, he basically ran down this list of gimmicky things that he did trying to get the listing. And, you know, the seller ended up choosing somebody else. And my answer was, you didn't earn the right to win the listing. You weren't good enough. You got beat. That seller chose somebody else because of what that somebody else was able to make them, you know, think that they could do to get the house sold. You didn't earn the right to be that seller's representative. Isn't that the bottom line truth? Isn't that the answer? But who else would have said that? Nobody.
Nobody wants to hear it.
Nobody wants to hear it. The whole room gasped, right? I like doing that. It's fun.
I know. Well, because what do agents go straight to? All the other guy must have overpriced and under commissioned. They bought the listing. Or all of these other non-related to your skill excuses.
Right, exactly. So that's what, so like everyone gets a participation trophy anymore, it seems like. Yeah. You know, Don Hobbs actually said that to me yesterday about Clubhouse. I thought it was hilarious. And it's true. But everybody gets a participation trophy. Everyone's advice and what they have to say is, you know, somehow magically supposed to be equal. That's not true. That isn't the way life works. You know, the reality of it is if you can attach yourself, and there's not very many people that are actually genuinely authentic, you know, very successful at anything in life, let alone doing what we do. So if you guys are, you know, wondering why you feel so confused and overwhelmed and why you're not knowing which direction to go and why you're being so endlessly attracted to being opportunistic, which is what a lot of the things that are being sold to you guys are, just little opportunistic things, little tchotchkes, little something or another to be a sort of a distraction from possibly ever learning to do the real work of real estate. Well, you guys are getting advice from the wrong people. Those are people that are not necessarily giving you advice for the betterment of yourself and your family and your hopes, your dreams, your goals. They're just looking to basically sell you something. And I hope you guys understand that. You know, this is, we're, you know, what, halfway into first quarter of 2021. How are you doing so far? How's the year looking for you?
On track, ahead, or behind. That's the game we play on our Premier right. Coaching Facebook Live. Let me give you the second example, which is a little happier example of why you have to call your people. One of our Austin clients who has, I mean, Austin is just completely on fire with these crazy, crazy, you know, higher prices every single month, practically day over day. It's
Julie, rising. Tell them that story that you told me about the fact that you saw some little Weasley deal where the listing agent was trying to get the buyer's agent to cut their commission.
Yeah, that's crazy.
What market was that?
I don't remember. It was on one of the pages that I follow.
No, it was on a Premier Coaching call. And so basically somebody essentially said, explain to them.
Okay. So the question was, is it illegal to, this was a question from the agent, is it illegal for the listing agent slash seller to make a stipulation of taking my offer if I'm on the buyer side that I give them my commission? I mean, that's pretty radical, aggressive, rude asking, I think. But the answer is, if you disclose everything, you can negotiate. People negotiate all this stuff all the time.
Yep. You can change. But that's important, though. So this goes back. And the reason I wanted Julie to bring this up is because we've been warning all of you guys, if you want to know where the ice is thin in real estate, it's definitely going to be on the buyer sides of the transactions. Buyer side commissions are not going to necessarily be an entitlement like they have been for generations of a real estate commission, of a real estate transaction. You're going to have to start using buyer agency contracts. You're going to have to start justifying the value you bring to that buyer, just like a listing agent, just like we train listing agents to do when they're going after sellers. You're going to actually have to move away from, you know, the buyer side of the business being primarily social and really physical labor, you know, opening doors and whatnot. And you're going to have to migrate towards the idea that it is going to be something that's going to require more sales skills, because it is.
This is a very hot topic on many of the different agent commentary places that I'm seeing, and of course amongst our coaching clients. And it's always having to do with the buyer side, always. I mean, yep. One of the hottest topics, I think Inman's running a story about when is it okay to reduce the buyer side commission, because that's something that's going on right now.
Well, the industry is going, this is all basically, this is the iBuyer's guide. If you guys want to know where this is all getting started, Zillow and Opendoor, again, we talked about this in the podcast before, but I'll just bottom line it for you. They've been testing out in different markets, and this is, you know, I don't remember the exact numbers, so don't hold us to it. But the gist of it was, is they determined that there was no detrimental effect to getting one of their flips sold, Opendoor or Zillow, if they reduce the commission down, I think it was a smidge
less.
A point and a half, right. Yeah. So they can reduce the commission down to a point and a half.
And still get it sold.
And there's no difference to the house getting sold or not. So why the heck would they pay 3% or 2.5% if they can pay a point and a half? And that's what's going to start happening.
Yeah, you want to be the listing agent. That's what this all right. Roads lead to you being the listing agent, if we haven't been clear about this. Now, let me get back to my Austin story. Okay, so hot seller's market. Lots of people coming from California to Austin and Nashville and places like that. Okay, so one of our coaching clients there has been calling her database with a very simple script based on actual facts.
That we wrote for her.
Yes. It basically...
You're missing a good point.
Go ahead.
Okay, Julie and I are on a walk. She forgot the beginning part of this story. Yeah. I didn't know you were going to tell this story. Yeah. So you and I are on a walk. It was about a month and a half ago.
Yep.
You get this sort of panic text from this coaching client, to which I said, call her, you know, yeah, don't do it now, Julie. We're on a walk.
Yeah.
And Julie said, this is a really good client. I really want to make sure this gal's really obviously having some sort of, you know, existential threat, emotional response to something. And Julie called her up while we were on our walk. And the gist of why she was calling is because she was unbelievably upset. Well, no, she was believably upset.
Very.
Because of the fact that she was losing some absolutely gorgeous transactions that were centers of influence, past clients, her past deals to, was it one or two deals to one particular new agent?
Well, not new agent, but new to the market and more aggressive agent.
Right.
Yeah.
And the lady.
Whose nickname now is Threat Vector.
Thread Vector. Oh, we got gave that to her too.
Yeah.
So she was like freaking out and like, I can't get this business. These are centers of influence of past clients. I don't know what she's doing. I don't know how she's doing it. And then it was, you know, I was listening. Julie was talking to this lady, and Julie was kind of, you know, going down the normal coaching routes with her and, you know, different things that she was trying to help the gal self-discover. That, but the essence of what was going on is this other agent was simply calling these cold calling these. Is that right?
Yeah.
She was cold calling and basically giving them blind offers on their houses.
Yeah. Well, this was specifically on one of our clients, older expireds. Okay. That expired at a price pre-COVID that back then, you know, it does take longer to sell the very high end. Okay. But now that we have all this new movement, this other agent had somebody coming in from California and was essentially cold calling on older expireds that met the person's criteria, you know, stuff that we also.
But these are hugely expensive.
Huge, okay.
10 million, 15 million, weren't they?
I want to say that it expired at 11 and just sold at 22.
And this is in Austin, Texas.
Yes.
Trust us.
This is not California.
There's not a lot of that in Austin, Texas.
It's partially because of California, but it's not in California.
Yeah, it's funny you said Elon Musk. He's probably buying all of them since he moved to Austin.
Right? He's probably collecting them again.
Well, so anyway,
we create a script because the question was, what am I supposed to do about this?
Right. And the script was basically calling all of her centers of influence and past clients and essentially telling them, if I can sell your house for twice what you paid, would you consider selling it? That was the gist.
That's the gist of it. Now, why is this related to our talking to your database? Okay, because one of her people that she called said, you know, if you have people like that will pay that for this neighborhood, and you didn't call me, we wouldn't be friends anymore. So, you know, this stuff does happen, and especially in a hot seller's market where people are talking to each other, there's pocket listings all the time. Everybody's excited about real estate. Everybody's being more aggressive. Probably 90% of what I see agents having questions about in coaching and also just online stuff, it has to do with fighting over procuring cause and stuff like that, where, you know, the listing agent did this to me, right? They're feeling victimized. And in fact, the listing agent was just doing their job most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, but the takeaway.
Listing agent always wins.
The takeaway is she hadn't been calling them before.
She had to get this painful lesson to probably a
$250,000 or $300,000 lesson.
Yes.
You know, as Rory used to say, won't do that one again.
How much did that one cost you? Yeah. Well, and that was a painful thing, but it made it more obvious that everybody needs to be talking to their people.
Calling
them, whether that's because you discover your next call, they really have to sell because, you know, they didn't get their job back after they were furloughed, or because they're in a hot neighborhood where you can absolutely cash them out better than ever and then turn them into a buyer for yourself. And because you're involved in the entire transaction, you have a lot more control. You know, that's another thing that I see amongst our coaching clients. This is very interesting, that actually do this. Okay. When they actually do this, they are connecting people and doing both sides of the deal instead of being in competitive situations, because they're looking at their database as shadow inventory. Everybody's complaining, not enough inventory, right? Look at the people who are in your database. That's your own private MLS to go into. When you've got wayward buyers that you can't find anything for them, go look towards your own past clients.
But beyond that, Julie, even if you, like, seriously, if we are to get back into real estate right now, and let's say we're selling real estate here in Dorado, Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
In Dorado, Puerto Rico, where we live, houses doubled in the last 12 months in value, which is insane.
Insane.
I mean, I can't even.
Up into the upper echelon of price ranges.
Yeah. There's houses here now that are basically selling in, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 million that were, I know of several houses that, when we moved here about 2 years ago, 18 months ago, they were for sale. You could have picked one up. And these are expensive houses too, guys. And trust me, Julie and I always are walking around a little bit of with our mouths open and that we live here. Trust me when I tell you, we don't take any of this for granted. We're just poor kids from Ohio. But there are houses that when we moved here probably were worth like $850,000, $1,200,000, like a golfer or whatnot.
Yep.
And now the sellers are turning offers down for, you know, basically not even for sale. In the threes. Same house built probably back
in the 90s. Not even rehabbed.
No, not even rehab, right? And so what I would do, if just based on what we were just talking about, if I were serious about getting in, you know, obviously building listing inventory, is I would just call every single soul.
Absolutely.
And I would just say, you know, Julie, we've never met before. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got a great house over at 123 Elm Street. Actually, it'd be 123 Palm Grove Street or something, right? We're right in Puerto Rico. And if I could bring you an offer today for roughly twice of what you paid for it, what would you tell me? You know?
Yeah, bring it on over.
Yeah, you would. You'd say, bring it on over.
Well, and you would also, of course, say, well, where am I going to live? And now you just got another deal.
Right. And maybe they have no place to move. Maybe they are just going to look at it as an opportunity to move, take their money off the table, frankly, and maybe they could do a lease back from, we've known people here and we have coaching clients. So the thing that on the buyer side transaction will often get your house, your buyer side offer accepted if you give the seller complete flexibility out moving out. Mm-hmm. In other words, let the buyer the seller essentially lease back for the buyer for a year maybe. And I know that puts a pinch on your buyer and everything is on blah, 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 blah. But if it's difference between getting the house and not getting the house, you're going to have to always be thinking about what's going to be motivating the seller, and it's almost always going to be the convenience of, you know, frankly, having an easy move out, going from one house to the next, all this stuff. But the moral of the story is, in a market like this, obviously the lowest hanging fruit you've got is your centers of influence and past clients. We are not opposed to sending them things and dropping off things and doing all the gifty things and all the rest of it. But what I'm here to tell you is that stuff is oversaturated, especially in the digital fronts. So the most effective thing all of you guys can be doing today is picking up the phone and calling your centers of influence and past clients. Remember, it was centers of influence and past clients. I know some of you don't have any past clients, but you do have centers of influence. Yes. They're called your friends, your family, the people you do business with, your old neighbors, your new neighbors. And those of you who are in our Premier Coaching Program, we have this list of money, memory joggers of all the places you might go to form your own list.
I think that's in the treasure map too.
Yeah. Well, I need to tell them how to get the treasure map for free. Mm-hmm. And here's the other thing. Do not say I need to get my CRM together before I start doing that. Do not do that. You could just print all your centers of influence out on a piece of paper, make them an index card. You don't need to overthink this.
And it is a good excuse to polish your CRM, but do it as you go. Don't try and, analysis paralysis yourself into no deals.
The CRM business is one of the biggest goofball businesses ever, if you ever think about it. Because I don't know if you guys know this, but most of the CRMs that you guys are subscribing to are all based on the same root software. And so what happens is these CRM marketing companies, they get the software and then they move things around, change the colors, change the font, make things look the same. But they are just basically reselling somebody else's software with their label on it and marking it up like 1,000 times for you guys. And that's what a lot of this stuff is. It's just the same stuff it's sold over and over again. And anyway, this is how a lot of these marketing things that you guys are buying into, thinking that they're great ideas, that's what they really are. They're just essentially things, if you dug around a little bit on the internet, you could find for free. Anyway, if you'd like to get the Real Estate Treasure Map, thinking of for free, and the Real Estate Treasure Map is your fill-in-the-blank 2021 business plan. If you haven't done this yet, make sure you do it immediately. Text 2021 to 855-685-1045. Text 2021 to 855-685-1045. And when you do, we're going to text you back a link and you can download the Real Estate Treasure Map, Think and Grow Rich for Real Estate, your 12-month lead generation guide, and all the rest of it. Go back and listen to the past few podcasts, because we've been really trying to help you guys drill down on what your primary lead generation sources have been. Notice we have not said TikTok.
No.
Notice we have not told you that you need to worry about how to take really good videos. That was not part of what we said. Again, there's working in real estate and then there's playing as if you're working in real estate. Do the real work in real estate and you'll get real everlasting results from the real work you do in real estate. And guys, this is the easiest business that people overcomplicate. So this is the easiest. Selling real estate is probably one of the most beautiful things you could have ever found yourself to be in. The industry itself is, frankly, I think this is going to be the best run in real estate for, I don't know how long, at least a decade that we've probably ever had. I mean that with 100% sincerity.
Absolutely.
All kinds of tailwinds to real estate, all kinds of demographic changes, interest rate changes, mindset changes, about everything is positive. All green lights for real estate. And if you're not helping a bunch of people making a ton of money in a market like this, it's probably because what you're trying to do, you're spending your time and effort on the wrong things. So step back towards the mindset of being of service to other people. Step back towards the mindset of having direct conversation and communication with people, because you will get faster results that way, especially when all of your competitors, and that is what they are migrating towards the passive stuff. A great place to start, if those of you who are looking for a real A to Z solution, is just get our book. It's like $13 on Amazon. You can get the Audible book too. The guy who read it for us is fantastic. Publisher found him. But the book is called Harris Rules, over 400. Actually, I haven't looked in a while. Have you looked?
I haven't in a couple weeks, I think.
Yeah, last time I looked, it was 445 star reviews.
So if you have it and you haven't given us a review yet, please do, because
we do look and we do read them too.
We do.
And we really appreciate them too. You know, let's find out. Let's see. 441.
Very nice.
There you go. So there it is. Get the book, Harris Rules, the Real Estate Agent's Practical No BS Step-by-Step Guide to Becoming Rich and Free. I mean, doesn't that say it all?
It does.
Who was the genius who wrote that?
I think it was you.
Oh, was it?
Mm-hmm. that and the cover design.
Yeah, I did the book. That. I did the text for the cover and the cover design. The publisher picked the colors, and Julie did most of the other work. It was perfect.
Yeah, right. Your turn. Anyway.
No, ma'am. All right, you guys have a fantastic day. We'll talk to you on the show tomorrow.
This program has been a presentation by Tim and Julie Harris, Real Estate Coaching. For more information on our real estate coaching and training programs, visit our website at timandjulieharris.com. Remember to tune in weekdays at noon for upcoming shows. And until next time, thank you for listening to Real Estate Coaching Radio with Tim and Julie Harris.